There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Usually in a print newspaper, it's just a separate section of the paper. You can tell the difference by what page it's on, generally set apart. News versus editorial, and we've grown up with that distinction. It's one that's often blurred, especially in, I guess you could say, cable news. Sometimes the news is very editorial. Sometimes the editorials aren't as newsy as they ought to be. What about print journalism? What about a recent New York Times editorial on religious liberty and the Affordable Health Care Act? Joining us to talk about media coverage of that issue and of a story about C.S. Lewis, very interesting take on C.S. Lewis, George Conger. He formerly served as a British correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and the overseas correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. He's a contributor to GetReligion.org. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd.
What is the difference, or what ought to be the difference, between straight news and editorial? And how has this editorial, oddly enough, in the New York Times on the issue of the Affordable Care Act, how has it crossed a line there, in your opinion?
Well, Todd, an editorial and a news article they're produced by two different divisions of a newspaper. An editorial gives the opinions, the arguments of the owners or the editorial directors of a newspaper. It doesn't have to be fair. It doesn't have to be balanced. It's an argument. A news report, on the other hand, doesn't deal in arguments. It deals in facts. It's supposed to give you all of the facts and the necessary context for a reader to make a reasonable judgment or have an understanding of what's going on. Well, an editorial seeks merely to persuade you to adopt one particular view over others.
So what did you find there in the coverage, or even the editorializing, of the New York Times about Obamacare that you found did not honor that distinction?
Well, on November 1st, a court in Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia Court of Appeals, handed down a ruling in a case on the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. And they held that Obamacare violated the First Amendment of the Constitution and was a clear violation of religious liberty. In other words, if you are compelling someone to do something that is odious to their religious views, if you're compelling them as a business owner to purchase contraception or abortion care coverage for your employees, that violates your religious liberties. And the government has no business doing that. That's what the court decided. Well, we had an article reporting that from the New York Times and an editorial reporting on that from the New York Times. The editorial said, this is a terrible decision. The state should decide what is an acceptable level of religious liberty, and if you don't like it, you've got to lump it. And we, the New York Times, believe that abortion and contraception are greater rights than religious liberty, and in this case, the rights of a Roman Catholic business owner to say, no, I'm not going to pay for medical coverage for my employees that violates my moral consciousness. The editorial says that, and, you know, that's just fine. The New York Times can come up with any opinion it wants. But in their news article on the same issue, they have that same attitude that you find in the editorial, and they shift facts, they omit things to make the article, you come away reading the article not knowing what the court decided, not knowing why they decided it, but yet hearing loud and clear the argument that religious liberty is basically a cloak for bigotry.
So you're basically saying here that the editorial line overwhelms the news reporting on this issue in the New York Times.
Yes, this is called advocacy journalism. You have this is the standard in Europe. You have liberal newspapers in France and in the UK, for instance, that will propound a liberal line. The Guardian newspaper in London will give you the liberal view on a certain point. They're unashamed about that. This is what they believe, and these are the facts you need to know so that you understand things the way they do. Whereas if you read the Telegraph, for instance, in London, you get the conservative line. So between the two, hopefully you can find the truth, because then you get most, if not all, the facts. The New York Times, however, pretends to print all the news that's fit to print. But instead, it follows the European advocacy line, which says that there's no need for balance in stories on religion and culture, because our views of religion and culture, the New York Times, that should be what everyone else believes. That, I think, an atrocious thing for an American newspaper to do.
This can be very subtle, though, can't it? I mean, it can be as subtle as a straight news piece offering more space to one side than to the other, not ignoring both sides, but simply letting the balance fall out of balance.
Absolutely. Most readers, when they pick up some sort of, you know, crazed rant on the Internet, for instance, they look at it, and within a paragraph or two, they may dismiss it out of hand as being just the arguments of one particular side or person. Now, what the New York Times does, and what any good journalist does who wants to get their point of view across, is that they start off telling the central facts, and then they begin to omit things. They don't give you the full story. For instance, in this article on the Affordable Care Act case, the New York Times tells you how that court decides and gives a very, very slight little blurb about what the court wrote. And meanwhile, further down the article, you get comments from the judge who dissented in the case, who in essence the New York Times supports, and you give him a lot of space to say why this decision was decided wrongly. But nowhere do you put in the full words, the full context, to allow the two to be balanced. So here, in this New York Times article of November 7th, you have a case of sort of bias by omission. You're omitting the key facts. You're omitting the arguments that allows an intelligent reader to understand what the court did, only putting in the arguments why what the court did was wrong. And that, you know, that's subtle. You don't, unless you know better, you're not going to pick it up. And most readers go to a newspaper in the first place to pick up things. They don't come with the knowledge already. They come to receive knowledge. And here the Times is only giving you half the story.
Now let's turn to the issue of fact-checking. You say that some recent coverage of C.S. Lewis, obviously a big anniversary being observed, could have benefited from just a little fact-checking, especially given the fact that people reading about C.S. Lewis, greatly beloved, know, a lot of the readers do know the facts about the man. What did you find there, George?
Well, there was an article from the Religion News Service about a conference at Wheaton College in Illinois about C.S. Lewis. And it just was a straightforward article that said, here's the conference, here's what they're talking about. And then they gave sort of some background and fillers in case you didn't know who C.S. Lewis was and why he was important. Well, now not everybody in the United States may know who C.S. Lewis is, but I think a large percentage of evangelicals, for instance, know who he is, may have read his fantasy books, may have read his religious apologetic works. And he sells millions of copies of his books each year, even though he's been dead over 50 years. For instance, years ago, my family and I lived in Oxford, England, and we lived in a little house just next door to where C.S. Lewis lived. And every day, come rain or come shine, American tourists would tramp to Lewis's old home and pilgrimage to, you know, see where the Chronicles of Narnia were written. And so when a reporter tries to fill in some background detail on somebody who is so well known, and he's just doing it from the back of an envelope or just what he remembers having read 20 years earlier, he gets himself in trouble. In this case, Religion News Service claimed that C.S. Lewis was involved in the occult. Now, that's an extraordinary thing, because there are some very conservative Christians who think that the use of magic and fantasy by Lewis in his novels is satanic. But that's, you know, a handful of people, though they may be very strong in their beliefs. But Lewis was not an occultist. And if you read his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, you can see what he thinks about this, see the only instance that he knew somebody when he was a young boy who was involved in the occult, but that doesn't mean he was an occultist. And, you know, little things like that on someone who's so well-known will get a reporter in trouble every single time.
So it's not just fact-checking here. It really has to do with a reporter may know the subject, but needs to check what he thinks he knows. It's something as simple as that, George?
Absolutely. In other words, I'll give you an example. Let's say I wrote an article, and then I had some throwaway line about Captain James D. Kirk, and I said, of the Starship Constitution. Now, it may not be immediately obvious to a reader in Bangkok that I've just made a howling mistake, but for tens of millions of Americans, they're going to think, this guy's an idiot. Not because the article is about Captain Kirk and the Starship Constitution, but because I didn't bother to actually do my homework and make sure I knew what I was talking about in the little things. Why should you have any confidence in the big things that I've just written?
George Conger formerly served as a British correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and the overseas correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. He's a contributor to GetReligion.org. George, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back on this Tuesday afternoon, November the 19th, we're going to be talking with Kevin Scutt. He has written the cover story for the latest Christian research journal, Video Games and Christians. Now, it is the world in which many young people, and increasingly many adults, live for several hours a day. The world of video games. It's a fascinating, can be an addicting place. Why have Christians been so silent on this major cultural phenomenon? We'll answer that question right after this.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Would you like to help your son or daughter achieve their maximum athletic potential? Hi, this is Jeff Schwarz, General Manager of Lutheran Public Radio. My friend, fellow parishioner, and certified athletic trainer, Kevin Reisick, is the owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. Arch Fitness specializes in sports performance training for middle school to collegiate level athletes. For more information, call Kevin at 618-670-6952. 618-670-6952.
Issues, etc. Regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, is author of our Book of the Month for November, Five Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Five Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, etc. Book of the Month for November, Five Things You Can Do to Live a Jesus-Centered Life.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org to find out more.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.